Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Paul Kirsch. I'm a full-time farmer from Marion County. I am here representing Oregon Farm Bureau Federation to testify on the churches, schools, and golf courses, but I won't. Apparently, that's out the window. So I guess what I have to say now is on my own personal opinion and not necessarily reflecting Farm Bureau, although I think a lot of it agrees with what Farm Bureau feels. What I see in our area is that we have a real serious problem right now with existing parcels that are were set off years ago and that are still around, and that you get these parcels, they're pockets in a farm zone, and they're scattered out, and they do cause problems. They're generally on almost always on real good soil, especially the homes. The homes that were built years ago were seem like always put on good soil. These parcels are also generally pretty small, in my opinion, there is no way that farmers can afford to buy these small parcels. If there's 2 and 3 acres are selling for $50,000-$60,000, there's absolutely no way that a farmer can afford to buy this property, even though it might even be on your farmland might be all the way around it. There is just, at least as far as I'm concerned, no way you can really justify buying that ground unless you're just flush with a lot of money. And so what you're looking at is basically non-farm people moving back on these parcels because they have a job in town and they have the capacity to finance something like this. Whereas a farmer, he's looking at a small parcel. If he gets 2 or 3 acres, you either have two choices. You either, assuming you have your own house and buildings, and you either bulldoze everything in a pile and burn it up and farm it, and that is a pretty expensive proposition. Or you can fix up the home and rent it out or have someone else live in there, and that really doesn't isn't a profitable situation either. So I'd just like to say that it's real important for me as a farmer that our farmland be preserved, and I'd just like to think that you folks on this committee can help my industry survive in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Are there questions? Thank you, Mr. Kirsch. Okay, Erwin Smuts, he leave? Okay. Larry Mossman? Mark Knapp.
I'm Mark Knapp from Rickery Hall. I'm a full-time farmer. Represent Polk County Farm Bureau and also serve on Oregon Farm Bureau Natural Environmental Resources Committee. I was going to speak to the schools and churches issue and golf course, but some other thoughts have been brought up that I would like to consider. When you start looking at marginal land on my farm, probably 25% of it could be considered marginal land. I farm 700 acres. There's certain crops you can grow on it. They aren't very economical. There's not too many options you have, but you have all kinds of this land exists. There's some parcels you can't do anything with. The problem we run into if we start setting these parcels aside for a single structure, especially if it's non-farm structure. Anytime the more non-farm structure you get, the more you run into compatibility problems. and sooner or later it's going to reach a peak. There's a lot of individuals, for one reason or another, are opposed to use of many chemicals that are totally necessary if you're going to be a viable farmer. A lot of the practices that we have to use to remain viable, field burning if you grow grass seed, dust, noise, smell from livestock, a lot of people object to. And sooner or later, if there's enough non-farm structures in this farm zone, they're going to threaten the viability of these farms. Enough of them can bring up maybe a health risk from chemicals. It's been shown in many cases that courts will rule that if it's a threat to health, these practices must cease, and that can threaten the viability of agriculture. Dealing with the $20,000 limit on these farms, gross, I think the major reason for that, if we don't have some limit there, a $20,000 gross in most cases, you're probably looking at a net of maybe possibly nothing, but realistically $500 to $2,000. I wouldn't consider that a viable farm. I don't know many people who can live today on $2,000. So we have to set some type of a limit to determine, is this really a farm structure that's going in, or is it a non-farm structure going into an EFU zone under the guise of a farm structure? Maybe there's certain crops that can be grown economically on small acreages. What happens when that crop is no longer viable? I mean, things change. A 500 acre farm a day isn't considered big, whereas 10 years ago it was. You know, maybe a 150 acre farm was compatible then. You continually have to get bigger to compete and produce on small margins. Once you start splitting these parcels down, allow structures onto them, your flexibility is limited. Options of what you can do with this land, even if it's representable farmland, declines in 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Here we got these structures out there. Maybe the operation that was marginally viable at the time no longer is, but here we're settled with this house. It's going to be there for the next 50, 100, 150 years, and basically it's a non-farm structure. This 10-acre plot, 5 acres, whatever it is no longer farmable, so we've lost this ground to farming as well as all the interferences that are developed by the non-farm structure and problems that people dwelling in these structures are going to have with all the farm uses. And I think some of these aspects need to be looked at very closely. Another thing I'd like to mention, much of this marginal land is excellent wildlife habitat. Land that's grown up into poison oak, for instance, since that was mentioned. All these other brush species are around farmland are some of the highest densities of deer populations dwell on these. Or we can consider the value of wildlife. All these marginal lands that go into housing are going to threaten and diminish the availability of wildlife. I think that's one aspect. Another, you know, these lands aren't totally useless there, and they're protecting the viability of farming as well as our wildlife resources. And I think these are some of the areas we have to look at very closely when we start determining are we going to allow non-farm structures in there, or where do we determine whether it is a farm structure? You know, if we get it too small, eventually it will become a non-farm structure. And the problems, if we don't deal with it today, we're going to create the problems for the future, you know, 10 or 15 years down the road, as we did, you know, 10 or 15 years ago with our problems of the day.
Thank you. Sir Kregler?
Just a brief question. Do you think this bill discourages people who aren't now in farming or related to farmers from ever going into farming?
I'm sure it does, and I think maybe that's good. You look at farming today, it's pretty tough. I mean, maybe if you can restrict it enough, there's enough big farms that are having trouble remaining viable. And it's, you know, it's a tough lesson to learn once you commit the money to it and find out you're no longer viable, and then you have this small plot there that the farmer can't buy. It's economically impossible for a farmer to come in and buy these small parcels once they've been a structure's allowed on it. It just isn't there. And I think we have to look at the long term. It's going to discourage farmers on these small plots, but I think it's in the best interest of of agriculture in general and the long-term viability of agriculture. And I think we have to remember right now agriculture is number one industry of Oregon. And it's just maintaining the economic structure as well as that is one of the reasons the livability of the state is as high as it is.
Well, one of the, Mr. Chairman, one of the pieces of testimony we had against the bill is that it was obviously from a different perspective, but that it was overly favorable to existing commercial farm operations, and that you have a 20-acre parcel, who's going to buy it? Somebody in town or the farmer with 120 acres next door? And there's both a good side and a bad side to that. The good side is that if you can keep it in intensive farm management, fine. The bad side is, I think, anyway, you tend to centralize into larger farms. Now, maybe that's just something that we're going to have to do. It's becoming tougher and tougher. The margin's getting smaller and smaller in agriculture. But there's a concern there that the traditional smaller family farm, or somebody who maybe doesn't want to become a commercial farmer, but just keep a smaller parcel open space and get some yield off of it, doesn't have much of a chance anymore.
Yeah, I see your question. I see the opposite from what you do. I think what's happening today, if there's a 20-acre plot available with no buildings on it, the small guy that wants to get started farming can't afford to buy it because the person that's going to buy it is the one that can pay a lot more than the farm use for it to put a structure on it and live on it. And he's not interested in farming, and in most cases you can drive around the country, those parcels like that are not being used for the use they could. You know, maybe they're running a horse on it. But, I mean, really, it is not being used for commercial agriculture. And I consider myself a struggling farmer trying to get started. I have a lot of, friends that are in that position. They're renting ground. They'd like to buy some. But the small parcels that they maybe could potentially be capable of buying, someone that lives in town, wants to put a house on, is coming out buying those parcels. And by removing the option of putting a house on this, the small farmer has something to get a start on. I mean, that plot, he doesn't have to live on it. It can be four or 5 miles from where he's farming. Maybe it's just down the road, but it gives him an opportunity to farm it. It'll maintain it in agriculture, and you don't have the problem of that house here and what you're going to do with it 10, 15, 20 years down the road when, there's no way it would be viably farmed as 20 acres.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Daryl Gerritsen. Daryl still around? There he is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Daryl Gerritsen, representing Yamhill County. Basically, given the action of the committee today, I don't have any testimony unless the committee has any questions or concerns regarding previous testimony.
Go away, please.
That means you're still against the bill?
That's correct, Senator. Day.
No, I clarify for those who are asleep. Well,
I had no doubt in my mind.
You were clear on that, huh?
Clear on that one. Let's see.
Even we cut out everything but the first.
There were three people from the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers. Are they still here, Marianne? Well, we got you down. Why don't you come up and you can.
I'm here.
I will note, I don't know at which point they left, but we will send them a notice that when we have a hearing on 232, where we're going to talk about that aggregate.
Oh, was that 234?
Excuse me, 234.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I agree with Senator Starkovich about going home. But Marianne Hutton, Associated Oregon Industries, just for the record, we were prepared to testify in opposition to the additional restrictions on the aggregate activities in the EFU zone and also opposing the exclusion of golf courses in the EFU zone, whether in this bill or in any other
churches?
Vehicle.
Did the AOI take a position on churches?
I don't recall that we have any members who are churches, but I'll have to check the roster.
Churchgoers?
Mark the Pope.
That was members who are churchgoes. That doesn't mean we don't have churchgoers. Also, there were members here from the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association and the Oregon Golf Course Owners Association and individuals on those issues, and they would have testified to the same effect. So, thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Marianne. Lois?
Don't they have any churches running in free enterprise? No churches operated.
Well, we're waiting.
Yes, sir, Dave.
This 122, I didn't get here in time, but you sent that and goes, what are we going to do on those? We've got three bills
now.
I'm confused. what three they are.
Actually, there's four.
Okay.
There's 223, which was the one out of the Interim Committee that set the priority date. Then there's 225, which is the
this is your
yeah, the list of the streams. And there's 122, which is abolishes the priority.
Interagency study.
So then there's an interagency study one.
And that's still.
Could I ask now, Todd? Would Todd give me a kind of a scratch sheet, because I'm having a hard time keeping just the numbers and the purpose. I would appreciate that. This is the Commission 122 that we've talked about before. The 122, is it not? This
that's
is
the Simmons Jackson bill. Yeah,
the Audrey Jackson.
That's the biggie. Okay. Lois.
For the record, my name is Lois Kanegi with Agriculture for Oregon. Apologies and regrets from Hector McPherson, who needed to stay with the dairy this afternoon. I won't speak long. I just want to reflect a little bit on the Jackson County testimony and suggest that possibly one of the actions this committee could take would be to recommend to the Joint Interim Committee on Land Use a study on the LISA method of analyzing farmland so that the Class 4 farmland that exists in Jackson County, which is heavy clay soils and very steep, as was described, might possibly come into the marginal land zone. I think Jackson County needs to be commended for their work on the plan. He talked about things being appropriately zoned EFU. I think one of the things that the marginal lands proposal tries to do is to find a way of removing those things which originally were appropriately EFU, but may now not be suitable for the kind of commercial farming that Goal 3 intends to protect. I would simply like to underline the kind of testimony that Mark Knopf of Rickreall gave a few minutes ago on the reasons for type criteria for marginal land, his comments that those criteria need to be very carefully drawn, and I would call attention also to testimony which I believe was passed out to you that I drafted this morning. Because one of the questions that Senator Starkovich raised a few minutes ago was, how do young farmers start farming in Oregon? And this question has come up throughout your hearings. And so in conversation with other persons from Ag Oregon and out of our own experience and the observation of young farmers getting started in the Corvallis community, where you have a lot of graduates from Oregon State in horticulture and a lot of the people that we used to call in the 60s the counterculture kind of thing. I mean, people who really have been interested in starting agriculture. I've watched them begin and do very creative things. I've summarized the way they've done that with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 six procedures, and I think at least, I'm sure that's not an exhaustive list. But basically, it underlines the kind of thing that the previous witness from Rickreall mentioned, that by putting an expensive home on a 20-acre parcel, you make it more difficult, not easier, for a young farmer to get started. And so I would like to call your attention, you can read the rest of it by yourself, but I'd like to call your attention to the second page and simply say, by the next to the last paragraph, by making an effort to ensure that persons wishing to build a home on parcels smaller than the average commercial operation actually are serious about farming, you will lessen the possibility of expensive homes being built on small parcels of farmland, which, if built, make the purchase price of the parcels prohibitive for the young farmer the next time the land changes ownership. In the same way, encouragement to use the life estate option will ensure that if and when a farm is purchased by a young farmer, the farmhouse, frequently of older style and not of great value but adequate for the farm family, will not already be owned by a non-farmer, having been sold after the death of the retired farmer. The young farmer then has the option of living on his own property. If that homestead can be cut off, then the young farmer may need to live away from his property while a professional person who works in town lives in the farmhouse. Now, the criteria of $20,000 may not be the right criteria. It may be that you need to go to $15,000 or $10,000. What Ag for Oregon is saying is that somehow there needs to be some criteria so that you know. And as we have seen, the farm management plans in operation, at least in the county that I come from, in Benton County, they have not always proved to be effective. And I think some kind of dollar criteria is helpful. I have nothing more today. If you have questions.
Lois, do you think those criteria need to be spelled out regardless of whether we went this way or with an exceptions process? The exceptions process.
For a non-farm dwelling?
Yes.
I mean, for a farm dwelling, to make sure a farm dwelling is a farm dwelling.
Yes.
I think so. I think that Ag for Oregon feels that there needs to be some kind of specific criteria on that. And particularly in the Willamette Valley. Now, again, you know, I don't know about Jackson County, and that raises some new problems there.
But something more than just in the best judgment of the county commission, some specific things.
Oh, that we had Peter Sages in every county. I mean, the kind of thoughtful, perceptive, rational decisions that obviously their Board of Commissioners made on the four illustrations that he gave is excellent. I just, you know, would commend Jackson County again for that kind of sane approach. I wish one had that kind of decision-making process in every county. If I may say so, I come from a county where we have seen a complete flip-flop in the kind of thoughtful decisions that were made prior to 2.5 years ago and the kind of decisions that are being made now. It went from a non-political, carefully thought-out option somehow to become a very political thing that will give you anything you ask for. And so that becomes a problem. That's why it seems to us that the criteria is so important. I will be eager to see your marked-up copy of whatever you're doing.
I love it.
I'm with Senator Dye, and Senator Dye, I'm also eagerly waiting those.
I know you are.
Didn't you want to put on the record your violent opposition to the amendments that we adopted today?
I would particularly like to put on my violent opposition to, and Senator Dye, I hope you will not be offended by this, because I am not at all opposed to boarding schools. In fact, I happen to be a constituent of a church that operates one of the few boarding schools in Oregon, and I am supportive of that. But I do think that a community has the right to have a discussion about that. And that would mean, you know, you didn't allow any testimony before you took that action on the boarding school with the Seventh-day Adventists. It would have been so easy. To have put the boarding schools in the conditional use part instead of in the permitted use, which would have been much, I think you would have served the communities of Oregon in a much better way. I just really regret that you did that in a permitted way. I have no objections to that dying in a conditional way. In the same way, that's my feeling about the churches, that ideally they should have gone in a conditional use, but it's a hot potato and there was misunderstanding, and so I commend you for having at least taken those red flags out. The aggregate, I hope you will deal with otherwise. That is a very...
Some of us plan to. We'll see what happens.
Thank you. Any other questions?
You're just a delight, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
If you do disagree with me.
Marvin? We'll pass. Marvin Gloves will pass.
Byron, I want to tell you I commend you for your good judgment tonight. Don't you sit around?
Finer thing he does tonight than he's ever done before.
Very fine quality.
Okay. James Merrick?
What do you guys want to do with this bill?
I'll be brief. My name is Jim Marsh. I am a farmer operating vineyards near Dundee. I speak not only for myself, but for about half a dozen other vineyardists, plus three long-established wineries, including Knutson Erath and Irie Vineyards, wineries that were founded back in prior to 1970. And right at this point, I feel like I've been jettisoned, unless I'm led to believe that apparently the aggregate issue, which is so important but controversial, will be discussed at another level. Is that correct?
In essence, it will be in a separate bill, sir, and I believe that bill is 234.
Yeah.
All right, and do you wish to testify? And if you do, we should make sure that he's notified, Todd, on 234.
Because I have some really important points that were raised not only by myself, but these long-established wineries, where the extension of the aggregate industry into the NFU zone would have a serious impact upon the Oregon wine industry.
Could you tell me, Senator
Day?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've heard these arguments and so forth. Tell me what happens to a vineyard that has a crushing operation. And let's say if we separate the batch plant mixing from the actual mining of aggregate. Tell me if it, just from the standpoint of just mining aggregate versus the batch plant.
So you're talking about grape crushing, you're talking about aggregate.
I know that.
To be perfectly...
You would like to get into that?
Okay. I have no argument as far as the effect of a crushing operation on my vineyard.
All right. It's the
batch plant, and I will be prepared to furnish evidence from France where they have substantial regulations that prevent asphalt operations in the fine vineyard districts of France. But I just wanted to have that opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a distinction that we've run into in a couple places around here. I think Yamhill County, it was the batch plant operation.
That's right, because they added that operation to their rock crushing operation.
Which was not originally.
That's right.
Senate Bill 234, and if you will tell the clerk, they will notify you in the hearing.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Just table 237.
Stevens?
Oh, but you only have three votes. How did you do that?
Oh, no. We're magic.
We suspended the rules.
Mr.
It's magic.
My name is Rodney Stevens, and I have a filbert orchard with my wife near Dundee. We're neighbors of the Marshes. We're one of the groups out there that is very much interested in this. I must admit to being confused today, too, whether it's proposed to leave some permitted use language in this particular bill, or whether at this time you're deleting everything, and at the time, quarrying is still a conditional use.
Let me try to clarify that for you. So what we were trying to do, at least my intention, and I guess there's a wide variety of opinion here, I'm very supportive of the bill in its entirety. We wanted to take out some of those things that I felt were, some of us felt were of lesser importance, that is, for example, the churches and schools and golf courses are, to me, of lesser importance than those issues about what kind of structures are we going to allow on the EFU zones. The aggregate question is one that I think merits consideration, and we're going to do that in a separate bill.
You're going to take all of the language out of this one?
The aggregate
on
language.
On the aggregate.
Yes, and that we will put that into 234, and we'll deal with that as a in its entirety, but in just in a separate bill.
I'd just like to make one comment then, because I'm interested in other sections of this bill, too.
Okay, please do.
I happen to be an individual who has been and is interested in protection to our farmland. I think it was a mistake to delete all of those sections. I have some understanding and sympathy for you, and I understand why you did it, but I think they were good restrictions, and I think they belong there, both with regard to the schools, the churches, and possibly the golf course. I haven't really studied that. I would like to say, generally, that we favor some kind of standards on a statewide basis very, very strongly. We've had 2 years of experience at the county level with problems, which I won't detail, but they have been sufficient that we feel we don't have any protection at that level. I think it varies throughout the state, but I would be very much disturbed by giving the county commission level the kind of carte blanche that you might get by permitted use or merely passing the decision down one further level. We feel strongly about this. I heard witnesses from Benton County last time make the statement to you that the population, the citizens, the taxpayers object to land use planning. And the same individuals somehow ignored the fact that that just isn't a fact, and it's been demonstrated on a statewide basis 2 or 3 times. We think it's important that these kind of standards be developed.
Yeah. Ms. Stevens, let me just say, and I will give equal time to Senator Day also. Mm-hmm. I agree with you about taking those provisions out, and my concern is that we weren't going to get any bill at all out of this committee. And we're just dealing with the politics of the situation.
I understand.
In the best of all worlds, I would have shot that little rascal out, but there are others that have different concerns.
I like to make the plea for it. The bureaucracy isn't always a bad word. It's become one. But we have to have controls. We have to have some guidance and regulation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Roberts.
I think that just to say in a little bit different way what the chairman said was that the bill had so many various elements in it that somebody would be in favor of one element but against another, and therefore vote against the whole bill because they're against that. So what we were trying to do in the bill is to narrow it down to a few issues that we could then fight for and not be fighting on 12 fronts at one time. So we're just trying to narrow it down to what we thought were the, at this time, certainly essential changes that we make, and hope that we could get agreement on some of these other elements in separate bills. vote it up or down, but not have the whole thing.
They would take the conditional use as most of them.
We have one or two take a pot shot there.
We'll be glad to appear on the other.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I like a little equal time here.
You got it.
And, no, I don't agree with necessarily what's in Senate Bill 237 for a variety of reasons, not because I don't want to set some standards. I disagree with the way the thrust and the approach is being taken on marginal land per se basis. I would like to see an exception process by some test. It has to be tested. But when you have an exception process, that it's possible to arrive at exceptions if you've met the test. I will tell you that it may be that everyone thinks everything's jolly in land use today. I have not received that message. And frankly, I've worked on it pretty hard over the years. And I really believe that we have to show that there is some equity in the situation. And I'm not for just turning everything over to a county commission, particularly because we're dealing really basically what's happening outside urbanization areas. We're really talking about country zoning, control, and what have you. That's what this whole argument is about. But I think we're going to have to design some system